better to have some practice. When you face Apophis, he said it so calmly, but his meaning was clear. He wouldn't be around when that happened. Carter nudged his half-eaten pizza.
I don't see how we can do it all in time. I know this is a personal mission for you, Sadie, but
she has to, Zia said gently. Carter, you once went off on personal mission in the middle of a crisis, didn't you? That worked out. She put her hand on Carter's. Sometimes you have to follow your heart. Carter looked like he was trying to swallow a golf ball. Before he could say anything, the ship's bell sounded. In the corner of the dining room, a loudspeaker crackled with blood-stained Blade's voice.
My lords and ladies, we have reached the Hall of Judgment.
The Black Temple looked just as I remembered. We made our way up the steps from the dock and passed between rows of obsidian columns that marched into the gloom. Sinister-looking scenes of underworld life glittered on the floor and in friezes circling the pillars, black designs on black stone. Despite the reed torches that burned every few meters, the air was so hazy with volcanic ash I couldn't see far in front of us. As we moved deeper into the temple, voices whispered around us. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw groups of spirits drifting across the pavilion, ghostly shapes camouflaged in the smoky air. Some moved aimlessly, crying softly or tearing at their clothes in despair. Others carried armfuls of papyrus scrolls. These ghosts looked more solid and purposeful, as if they were waiting for something.
"Petitioners," Walt said. "They've brought their case files, hoping for an audience with Osiris. He was gone so long, there must be a real backlog of cases."
Walt's step seemed lighter. His eyes looked more alert, his body less weighed down by pain. He was so close to death, I'd feared this trip to the underworld might be hard for him. But if anything, he seemed more at ease than the rest of us. "How do you know?" I asked. Walt hesitated.
"I'm not sure. It just seems correct."
"And the ghosts without scrolls?"
"Refugees,"
he said.
"They're hoping this place will protect them."
I didn't ask what from. I remembered the ghost at the Brooklyn Academy dance who'd been engulfed in black tendrils and dragged underground. I thought about the vision Carter had described. Our mother huddled beneath a cliff somewhere in the Duat, resisting the pull of a dark force in the distance. "We need to hurry." I started to forge ahead, but Zia grabbed my arm.
"There," she said. "Look."
The smoke parted. 20 meters ahead stood a massive set of obsidian doors. In front of them, an animal the size of a greyhound sat on its haunches, an oversized jackal with thick black fur, fluffy pointed ears, and a face somewhere between a fox and a wolf. Its moon-colored eyes glittered in the darkness. It snarled at us, but I wasn't put off. I may be biased, but I think jackals are cute and cuddly, even if they were known for digging up graves in ancient Egypt. "It's just Anubis," I said hopefully. "This is where we met him last time."
"That's not Anubis," Walt warned.
"Of course it is," I told him. "Watch."
"Sadie, don't," Carter said, but I walked toward the guardian.
"Hello, Anubis," I called. "It's just me, Sadie." The cute fuzzy jackal bared his fangs. His mouth began to froth. His adorable yellow eyes sent an unmistakable message. "One more step and I'll chew your head off." I froze. "Right. That's not Anubis, unless he's having a really bad day."
"This is where we met him before," Carter said. "Why isn't he here?" "It's one of his minions," Walt ventured. "Anubis must be elsewhere."
Again, he sounded awfully sure, and I felt a strange pang of jealousy. Walt and Anubis seemed to have spent more time talking with each other than with me. Walt was suddenly an expert on all things deathly. Meanwhile, I couldn't even be near Anubis without invoking the wrath of his chaperone, Shu, the god of hot air. It wasn't bloody fair. Zia moved next to me, gripping her staff.
"So what now? Do we have to defeat it to pass?"
I imagined her lobbing some of her daisy-destroying fireballs. That's all we needed, a yelping, flaming jackal running through my father's courtyard.
"No," Walt said, stepping forward. "It's just a gatekeeper. It needs to know our business."
"Walt," Carter said, "if you're wrong." Walt raised his hands and slowly approached the jackal.
I am Walt Stone,
he said.
This is Carter and Sadie Kane, and this is Zia...
Rashid?
Zia supplied.
We have business at the Hall of Judgment, Walt said.
The jackal snarled, but it sounded more inquisitive, not so chew-your-head-off hostile.
We have testimony to offer, Walt continued. Information relevant to the trial of Setna.
Walt, Carter whispered, when did you become a junior lawyer? I shushed him. Walt's plan seemed to be working. The jackal tilted its head as if listening, then rose and padded away into the darkness. The obsidian double doors swung open silently. Well done, Walt, I said. How did you... He faced me, and my heart did a somersault. Just for a moment, I thought he looked like... No. Obviously, my mixed-up emotions were playing with my mind. How did you know what to say? Walt shrugged.
I took a guess.
Just as quickly as they'd opened, the doors began to close. Hurry, Carter warned. We sprinted into the courtroom of the dead. At the start of the autumn semester, my first experience in an American school, our teacher had asked us to write down our parents' contact information and what they did for a living in case they could help with Career Day. I had never heard of Career Day. Once I understood what it was, I couldn't stop giggling. Could your dad come talk about his work? I imagined the headmistress asking. Possibly, Mrs. Laird, I'd say, except he's dead, you see. Well, not completely dead. He's more of a resurrected god. He judges mortal spirits and feeds the hearts of the wicked to his pet monster. Oh, and he has blue skin. I'm sure he'd make quite an impression on Career Day for all those students aspiring to grow up and become ancient Egyptian deities. The Hall of Judgment had changed since my last visit. The room tended to mirror the thoughts of Osiris, so it often looked like a ghostly replica of my family's old apartment in Los Angeles from the happier times when we all lived together. Now, possibly because Dad was on duty, the place was fully Egyptian. The circular chamber was lined with stone pillars carved in lotus flower designs. Braziers of magic fire washed the walls in green and blue light. In the center of the room stood the scales of justice, two large golden saucers balanced from an iron T. Kneeling before the scales was the ghost of a man in a pinstriped suit, nervously reciting from a scroll. I understood why he was tense. On either side of him stood a large reptilian demon with green skin, a cobra head, and a wicked-looking pole arm poised over the ghost's head. Dad sat at the far end of the room on a golden dais with a blue-skinned Egyptian attendant at his side. Seeing my father in the duat was always disorienting, because he appeared to be two people at once. On one level, he looked like he had in life, a handsome, muscular man with chocolate-brown skin, a bald scalp, and a neatly trimmed goatee. He wore an elegant silk suit and a dark travelling coat, like a businessman about to board a private jet. On a deeper level of reality, however, he appeared as Osiris, god of the dead. He was dressed as a pharaoh in sandals, an embroidered linen kilt, and rows of gold and coral neckbands on his bare chest. His skin was the colour of a summer sky. Across his lap lay a crook and flail, the symbols of Egyptian kingship. As strange as it was seeing my father with blue skin and a skirt, I was so happy to be near him again I quite forgot about the court proceedings. Dad! I ran toward him. Carter says I was foolish, but Dad was the king of the court, wasn't he? Why shouldn't I be allowed to run up to say hello? I was halfway across when the snake demons crossed their pole arms and blocked my path.
It's all right, Dad said, looking a bit startled. Let her through.
I flew into his arms, knocking the crook and flail out of his lap. He hugged me warmly, chuckling with affection. For a moment, I felt like a little girl again, safe in his embrace. Then he held me at arm's length, and I could see how weary he was. He had bags under his eyes. His face was gaunt. Even the powerful blue aura of Osiris, which normally surrounded him like the corona of a star, flickered weakly.
Sadie, my love, he said in a strained voice. Why have you come? I'm working.
I tried not to feel hurt. But, Dad, this is important. Carter, Walt, and Zia approached the dais. My father's expression turned grim.
I see, he said. First, let me finish this trial. Children, stand here on my right. and please don't interrupt."
My dad's attendant stamped his foot.
"My lord, this is most irregular."
He was an odd-looking fellow, an elderly blue Egyptian man with a huge scroll in his arms. Too solid to be a ghost, too blue to be human, he was almost as decrepit as Ra, wearing nothing but a loincloth, sandals, and an ill-fitting wig. I suppose that glossy black wedge of fake hair was meant to look manly in an ancient Egyptian sort of way, but along with the coal eyeliner and the rouge on his cheeks, the old boy looked like a grotesque Cleopatra impersonator. The roll of papyrus he held was simply enormous. Years ago, I'd gone to synagogue with my friend Liz, and the Torah they kept there was tiny in comparison.
"It's all right, Disturber," my father told him. "We may continue now."
"But my lord!"
The old man, was his name really Disturber, became so agitated he lost control of his scroll. The bottom dropped out and unraveled, bouncing down the steps like a papyrus carpet.
"Oh, bother, bother, bother!"
Disturber struggled to reel in his document. My father suppressed a smile. He turned back to the ghost in the pinstriped suit, who was still kneeling at the scales.
"My apologies, Robert Wyndham. You may finish your testimony."
The ghost bowed and scraped.
"Yes, Lord Osiris."
He referred to his notes and began rattling off a list of crimes he wasn't guilty of. Murder, theft, and selling cattle under false pretenses. I turned to Walt and whispered, "He's a modern chap, isn't he? What's he doing in Osiris's court?" I was a bit troubled to find that Walt, once again, had an answer.
"The afterlife looks different to every soul," he said, "depending on what they believe. For that guy, Egypt must have made a strong impression. Maybe he read the stories when he was young."
"And if someone doesn't believe in any afterlife?" I asked. Walt gave me a sad look.
"Then that's what they experience."
On the other side of the dais, the blue god Disturber hissed at us to be quiet. Why is it when adults try to silence kids, they always make more noise than the noise they're trying to stop? The ghost of Robert Wyndham seemed to be winding down his testimony.
"I haven't given false witness against my neighbours. Sorry, I can't read this last line."
"Fish!" Disturber yelped crossly. "Have you stolen any fish from the Holy Lakes?"
"I lived in Kansas," the ghost said, "so, no."
My father rose from his throne.
"Very well. Let his heart be weighed."
One of the snake demons produced a linen parcel the size of a child's fist. Next to me, Carter inhaled sharply.
"His heart is in there?"
"Shh!" Disturber said so loudly his wig almost fell off.
"Bring forth the destroyer of souls!"
On the far wall of the chamber, a doggy door burst open. Amit ran into the room in great excitement. The poor dear wasn't very coordinated. His miniature lion chest and forearms were sleek and agile, but his back half was a stubby and much less agile hippo bum. He kept sliding sideways, swerving into pillars and knocking over braziers. Each time he crashed, he shook his lion's mane and crocodile snout and yipped happily. Carter is scolding me, as always. He says Amit is female. I'll admit I can't prove it either way, but I've always thought of Amit as a boy monster. He's much too hyper to be otherwise, and the way he marks his territory... But never mind.
"There's my baby,"
I cried, quite carried away.
"There's my poochikins."
Amit ran at me and leapt into my arms, nuzzling me with his rough snout.
"My Lord Osiris!"
Disturber lost the bottom of his scroll again, which unraveled around his legs.
"This is an outrage!"
"Sadie," Dad said firmly, "please do not refer to the devourer of souls as Poochikins."
"Sorry," I muttered, and let Amit down. One of the snake demons set Robert Wyndham's heart on the scales of justice. I'd seen many pictures of Anubis performing this duty, and I wished he were here now. Anubis would have been much more interesting to watch than some snake demon. On the opposite scale, the Feather of Truth appeared. Don't get me started on the Feather of Truth. The scales wavered. The two saucers stopped just about even. The pinstriped ghost sobbed with relief. Amit whimpered disappointedly.
"Most impressive," my father said. "Robert Wyndham, you have been found sufficiently virtuous despite the fact you are an investment banker. Red Cross donations, baby!
The ghost yelled.
Yes, well, Dad said dryly, you may proceed to the afterlife.
A door opened to the left of the dais. The snake demons hauled Robert Wyndham to his feet.
Thank you, he yelled as the demons escorted him out. And if you need any financial advice, Lord Osiris, I still believe in the long-term viability of the market.
The door shut behind him. Disturber sniffed indignantly.
Horrible man, my father shrugged. A modern soul who appreciated the ancient ways of Egypt. He couldn't have been all bad.
Dad turned to us.
Children, this is Disturber, one of my advisors and gods of judgment.
Sorry? I pretended not to have heard. Did you say he's disturbed?
Disturber is my name, the guard shouted angrily. I judge those who are guilty of losing their temper. Yes.
Despite my father's weariness, his eyes sparkled with amusement.
That was Disturber's traditional duty, although now that he's my last minister, he helps me with all my cases. There used to be 42 judgment guards for different crimes, you see, but...
Like Hotfoot and Fire Embracer,
Zia said. Disturber gasped.
How do you know of them?
We saw them, Zia said, in the fourth house of the night.
You saw?
Disturber almost dropped his scroll altogether.
Lord Osiris, we must save them immediately! My brethren!
We will discuss it,
Dad promised.
First, I want to hear what brings my children to the Duat.
We took turns explaining. The rebel magicians and their secret alliance with Apophis, their impending attack on the first gnome, and our hope to find a new sort of execration spell that might stop Apophis for good. Some of our news surprised and troubled our father, like the fact that many magicians had fled the first gnome, leaving it so poorly defended that we'd sent our initiates from Brooklyn House to help, and that Amos was flirting with the powers of Set.
No,
Dad said.
No, he can't. These magicians who've abandoned him, inexcusable. The House of Life must rally to the Chief Lector.
He began to rise.
I should go to my brother. My lord,
Disturber said.
You are not a magician any more. You are Osiris.
Dad grimaced, but he eased back into his throne.
Yes, yes, of course. Please, children, continue.
Some of our news Dad already knew. His shoulders slumped when we mentioned the spirits of the dead who were disappearing, and the vision of our mum lost somewhere in the deep Duat, fighting against the pull of a dark force that Carter and I were certain was the shadow of Apophis.
I have searched for your mother everywhere,
Dad said despondently.
This force that is taking the spirits, whether it's the serpent's shadow or something else, I cannot stop it. I can't even find it. Your mother...
His expression turned brittle as ice. I understood what he was feeling. For years he had lived with guilt because he couldn't prevent our mum's death. Now she was in danger again, and even though he was the Lord of the Dead, he felt helpless to save her.
We can find her, I promised. All of this is connected, Dad. We have a plan.
Carter and I explained about the Shoot and how it might be used for a king-sized execration spell. My father sat forward, his eyes narrowed.
Anubis told you this? He revealed the nature of the Shoot to a mortal?
His blue aura flickered dangerously. I'd never been scared of my dad, but I'll admit I took a step back. Well, it wasn't just Anubis.
Toth helped, Carter said,
and some of it we guessed.
Toth, my father spat. This is dangerous knowledge, children, much too dangerous. I won't have you...
Dad, I shouted. I think I surprised him, but my patience had finally snapped. I'd had quite enough of gods telling me what I shouldn't or couldn't do. Apophis's shadow is what's drawing the souls of the dead. It has to be. It's feeding on them, getting stronger as Apophis prepares to rise. I hadn't really processed that idea before, but as I spoke the words, they felt like the truth. Horrifying, but the truth. We've got to find the shadow and capture it, I insisted. Then we can use it to banish the serpent. It's our only chance, unless you want us to use a standard execration. We've got the statue ready to go for that, don't we, Carter?
Carter patted his backpack. The spell will kill us, he said, and it probably won't work. But if that's our only option...
Zia looked horrified.
Carter, you didn't tell me. You made a statue of...
him?
You'd sacrifice yourself to—
No, our father said. The anger drained out of him. He slumped forward and put his face in his hands.
No, you're right, Sadie. A small chance is better than none. I just couldn't bear it if you—
He sat up and took a breath, trying to regain his composure.
How can I help? I assume you came here for a reason, but you're asking for magic I don't possess.
Yes, well, I said, that's the tricky part. Before I could say more, the sound of a gong reverberated through the chamber. The main doors began to open.
My lord, Disturber said, the next trial begins.
Not now, my father snapped. Can't it be delayed?
No, my lord,
the blue god lowered his voice.
This is his trial, you know.
Oh, by the 12 gates of the night, Dad cursed. Children, this trial is very serious.
Yes, I said. Actually, that's what—
We'll talk afterward, Dad cut me off. And please, whatever you do, don't speak to the accused or make eye contact with him. This spirit is particularly—
The gong sounded again. A troop of demons marched in, surrounding the accused. I didn't have to ask who he was. Setna had arrived. The guards were intimidating enough. Six red-skinned warriors with guillotine blades for heads. Even without them, I could tell Setna was dangerous from all the magical precautions. Glowing hieroglyphs spiraled around him like the rings of Saturn, a collection of anti-magic symbols like suppress, dampen, stay, shut up, powerless, and don't even think about it. Setna's wrists were bound together with pink strips of cloth. Two more pink bands were tied around his waist. One was fastened around his neck, and two more connected his ankles, so he shuffled as he walked. To the casual observer, the pink ribbons might have looked like the Hello Kitty incarceration playset, but I knew from personal experience that they were some of the most powerful magic bonds in the world.
The Seven Ribbons of Hawthor, Walt whispered. I wish I could make some of those. I've got some,
Zia murmured,
but the recharge time is really long. Mine won't be ready until December.
Walt looked at her in awe. The guillotine demons fanned out on either side of the accused. Setna himself didn't look like trouble, certainly not someone worthy of so much security. He was quite small, not best small, mind you, but still a diminutive man. His arms and legs were scrawny. His chest was a xylophone of ribs, yet he stuck out his chin and smiled confidently as if he owned the world, which isn't easy when one is wearing only a loincloth and some pink ribbons. Without a doubt, his face was the same one I'd seen in the wall at the Dallas Museum, and again in the Hall of Ages. He'd been the priest who sacrificed that bull in the shimmering vision from the New Kingdom. He had the same hawkish nose, heavy-lidded eyes, and thin, cruel lips. Most priests from ancient times were bald, but Setna's hair was dark and thick, slicked back with oil like a 1950s tough boy. If I'd seen him in Piccadilly Circus, with more clothes on, hopefully, I would have steered clear, assuming he was handing out advertisements or trying to sell scalped tickets to a West End show. Sleazy and annoying? Yes. Dangerous? Not really. The guillotine demons pushed him to his knees. Setna seemed to find that amusing. His eyes flickered over the room, registering each one of us. I tried not to make eye contact, but it was difficult. Setna recognized me and winked. Somehow I knew that he could read my jumbled emotions quite well, and that he found them funny. He inclined his head toward the throne.
"Lord Osiris, all this fuss for me? You shouldn't have."
My father didn't answer. With a grim expression, he gestured at Disturber, who shuffled through his scroll until he found the proper spot.
"Setna, also known as Prince Kaim Wasset."
"Oh, wow." Setna grinned at me, and I fought the urge to smile back.
"Haven't heard that name in a while. That's ancient history right there."
Disturber huffed.
"You stand accused of heinous crimes. You have blasphemed against the gods 4,092 times.
91, Setna corrected. "That crack about Lord Horus, that was just a misunderstanding." He winked at Carter.
"Am I right, pal?"
How in the world did he know about Carter and Horus? Disturber shuffled his scroll.
You have used magic for evil purposes, including 23 murders. Self-defense.
Setna tried to spread his hands, but the ribbons restrained him.
Including one incident where you were paid to kill with magic, Disturber said.
Setna shrugged.
That was self-defense for my employer. You plotted against 3 separate pharaohs,
Disturber continued.
You tried to overthrow the House of Life on 6 occasions. Most grievous of all, you robbed the tombs of the dead to steal books of magic.
Setna laughed easily. He glanced at me as if to say, can you believe this guy?
Look, Disturber, he said, that is your name, right? A handsome, intelligent judgment god like you? You've gotta be overworked and underappreciated. I feel for you, I really do. You've got better things to do than dig up my old history. Besides, all these charges, I answered them already in my previous trials.
Oh... Disturber looked confused. He adjusted his wig self-consciously and turned to my dad.
Should we let him go then, my lord?
No, Disturber.
Dad sat forward. The prisoner is using divine words to influence your mind, warping the most sacred magic of Maat. Even in his bindings, he is dangerous. Setna examined his fingernails.
Lord Osiris, I'm flattered, but honestly, these charges... Silence!
Dad thrust his hand toward the prisoner. The swirling hieroglyphs glowed brighter around him. The ribbons of Hothor tightened. Setna began to choke. His smug expression melted, replaced by absolute hatred. I could feel his anger. He wanted to kill my father, kill us all. Dad, I said, please don't. My father frowned at me, clearly unhappy with the interruption. He snapped his fingers and Setna's bonds eased. The ghost magician coughed and retched.
Ka-em-waset, son of Ramses, my father said calmly. You have been sentenced to oblivion more than once. The first time you managed to plead for a reduced sentence, volunteering to serve the pharaoh with your magic.
Yes,
Setna croaked. He tried to recover his poise, but his smile was twisted with pain.
I'm skilled labor, my lord. It would be a crime to destroy me. Yet you escaped en route. My father said, you killed your guards and spent the next 300 years sowing chaos across Egypt.
Setna shrugged.
It wasn't that bad, just a bit of fun. You were captured and sentenced again.
My father continued, 3 more times. In each instance, you connived your way to freedom. And since the gods have been absent from the world, you've run amok, doing as you pleased, committing crimes and terrorizing mortals.
My lord, that's unfair, Setna protested. First of all, I missed you, gods. Honestly, it was a dull few millennia without you. As for these so-called crimes, well, some people might say the French Revolution was a first-class party. I know I enjoyed myself. An Archduke Ferdinand, a total bore. If you knew him, you would have assassinated him too. Enough, Dad said. You are done. I am the host of Osiris now. I will not tolerate the existence of a villain like you, even as a spirit. This time, you are out of tricks.
Amit yipped excitedly. The guillotine guards chopped their blades up and down as if they were clapping. Disturber cried,
"Hear, hear!"
As for Setna, he threw back his head and laughed. My father looked stunned, then outraged. He raised his hand to tighten the ribbons of Hathor, but Setna said,
Wait, my lord, here's the thing. I'm not out of tricks. Ask your children over there. Ask their friends. Those kids need my help. No more lies, my father growled. Your heart shall be weighed again, and a meat will devour...
Dad! I shrieked. He's right! We do need him! My father turned toward me. I could practically see the grief and rage roiling inside him. He'd lost his wife again. He was powerless to assist his brother. A battle for the end of the world was about to begin, and his children were on the front line. Dad needed to serve justice on this ghost magician. He needed to feel that he could do something right.
Dad, please listen, I said. I know it's dangerous. I know you'll hate this. But we came here because of Setna. What we told you earlier about our plan, Setna's got the knowledge we need.
Sadie's right, Carter said. Please, Dad, you asked how you could help. Give us custody of Setna. He's the key to defeating Apophis.
At the sound of that name, a cold wind blew through the courtroom. The braziers sputtered. Amit whimpered and put his paws over his snout. Even the guillotine demons shuffled nervously.
No, Dad said. Absolutely not. Setna is influencing you with his magic. He is a servant of chaos.
My lord, Setna said, his tone suddenly soft and respectful. I'm a lot of things, but a servant of the snake? Nah. I don't want the world destroyed. There's nothing in that for me. Listen to the girl. Let her tell you her plan.
The words worked their way into my mind. I realized Setna was using magic, commanding me to speak. I steeled myself against the urge. Sadly, Setna was ordering me to do something I loved. Talk. It all came spilling out, how we'd tried to save the Book of Overcoming Apophis in Dallas, how Setna had spoken with me there, how we'd found the Shadow Box and struck on the idea of using the Shoot. I explained my hopes to revive Bess and destroy Apophis.
It's impossible, Dad said. Even if it wasn't, Setna can't be trusted. I would never release him, especially not to my children. He'd kill you at the first opportunity. Dad.
Carter said, we're not children anymore. We can do this. The agony in my father's face was hard to bear. I forced back my tears and approached the throne. Dad, I know you love us. I gripped his hand. I know you want to protect us, but you risked everything to give us a chance at saving the world. Now it's time we did that. This is the only way.
She's right. Setna managed to sound regretful, as if he was sorry he might get a reprieve.
Also, my lord, it's the only way to save the spirits of the dead before the shadow of Apophis destroys them all, including your wife.
My father's face turned from sky blue to deep indigo. He gripped the throne like he wanted to tear off the armrests. I thought Setna had gone too far. Then my father's hands relaxed. The anger in his eyes changed to desperation and hunger.
Guards, he said, give the prisoner the feather of truth. He will hold it while he explains himself. If he lies, he will perish in flames.
One of the guillotine demons plucked the feather from the scales of justice. Setna looked unconcerned as the glowing plume was placed in his hands.
Right. He began, so, your kids are correct. I did create a shadow execration spell. In theory, it could be used to destroy a god, or even Apophis. I never tried. Unfortunately, it can only be cast by a living magician. I died before I could test it. Not that I wanted to kill any gods, my lord. I was just thinking I'd use it to blackmail them into doing my bidding.
Blackmail? The gods,
Dad growled. Setna smiled guiltily.
This was back in my misguided youth. Anyway, I recorded the formula in several copies of the Book of Overcoming Apophis.
Walt grunted, which have all been destroyed.
Okay, Setna said, but my original notes would still be in the margins of the Book of Thoth that I stole. See, being honest, I guarantee you even Apophis hasn't found that book. I hid it too well.
I can show you where it is. The book will explain how to find the shadow of Apophis, how to capture it, and how to cast the execration.
Can't you just tell us how? Carter asked. Setna pouted.
Young master, I'd love to, but I don't have the whole book memorized, and it's been millennia since I wrote that spell. If I told you one wrong word in the incantation, well, we wouldn't want any mistakes. But I can lead you to the book. Once we get it...
We? Zia asked. Why can't you just give us directions to the book? Why do you need to come along?
The ghost grinned.
Because, thou, I'm the only one who can retrieve it. Traps, curses, you know. Besides, you'll need my help deciphering the notes. The spell is complicated, but don't worry. All you gotta do is keep these ribbons of Hathor on me. It's Zia, right? You've got experience using them.
How did you know
if I cause you any trouble? Setna continued. You can tie me up good like a Harvest Day present. But I won't try to escape, at least not until I lead you to the Book of Thoth and then get you safely to the Shadow of Apophis. Nobody knows the deepest levels of the Duat like I do. I'm your best hope for a guide.
The Feather of Truth didn't react. Setna didn't go up in flames, so I guessed he wasn't lying.
Four of us, Carter said, one of him. Except he killed his guards last time, Walt pointed out.
So we'll be more careful, Carter said. All of us together should be able to keep him under control.
Setna winced. Oh, except, see, Sadie's got her little side task, doesn't she? She's gotta find the Shadow of Bess. And actually, it's a good idea.
I blinked. It is?
Absolutely, Dal, Setna said. We don't have much time. More specifically, your friend Walt there doesn't have much time.
I wanted to kill the ghost, except he was already dead. I suddenly hated that smug smile. I gritted my teeth. Go on.
Waltstone, sorry, pal, but you won't survive long enough to get the Book of Thoth, travel to the Shadow of Apophis, and use the spell. There just isn't time left on your clock. But getting Bess's shadow, that won't take as long. It'll be a good test of the magic. If it works, great. If it doesn't, well, we've only lost one dwarf guard.
I wanted to stomp his face, but he gestured for patience.
What I'm thinking, he said, is we split up. Carter and Zia, you two go with me to get the Book of Thoth. Meanwhile, Sadie takes Walt to the ruins of Seus to find the dwarf's shadow. I'll give you some notes on how to capture it, but the spell is just theory. In practice, you'll need Walt's charm-making skill to pull it off. He'll have to improvise if anything goes wrong. If Walt succeeds, then Sadie will know how to capture a shadow. If Walt dies afterward, and I'm sorry, but casting a spell like that will probably do him in, then Sadie can rendezvous with us in the Duat, and we'll hunt down the snake's shadow. Everybody wins!
I wasn't sure whether to weep or scream. I only managed to keep my calm because I sensed that Setna would find any reaction extremely funny. He faced my father.
What do you say, Lord Osiris? It's a chance to get your wife back, defeat Apophis, restore Bess's soul, save the world. All I ask is that when I come back, the court take my good deeds into consideration when you sentence me. How fair is that, huh?
The chamber was silent, except for the crackling fires in the braziers. Finally, Disturber seemed to shake himself out of a trance.
My lord, what is your ruling?
Dad looked at me. I could tell he hated this plan, but Setna had tempted him with the one thing he couldn't pass up, a chance to save our mum. The vile ghost had promised me one last day alone with Walt, which I wanted more than anything, and a chance to save Bess, which was a close second. He'd put Carter and Zia together and promised them a chance to save the world. He'd put hooks in all of us and reeled us in like fish from a sacred lake. But despite the fact that I knew we were being played, I couldn't find a reason to say no. "We have to, Dad," I said. He lowered his head.
"Yes, we do. May Mart protect us all."
"Oh, we'll have fun," Setna said cheerfully. "Shall we get going? Doomsday isn't gonna wait."
11. Don't worry, be happy. Typical. Sadie and Walt go off looking for a friendly shadow, while Zia and I escort a psychotic, murderous ghost to his heavily trapped stash of forbidden magic. Gee, who got the better end of that deal? The Egyptian queen burst out of the underworld and into the Nile like a breaching whale. Its paddle wheel churned through the blue water. Its smokestacks billowed golden smoke into the desert air. After the gloom of the Duat, the sunlight was blinding. Once my eyes adjusted, I saw we were chugging downriver, heading north, so we must have surfaced somewhere to the south of Memphis. On either side, marshy green riverbanks columned with palm trees stretched into the humid haze. A few houses dotted the landscape. A battered pickup truck rumbled down the riverfront road. A sailboat glided by on our port side. No one paid us any attention. I wasn't sure exactly where we were. It could have been anywhere along the Nile. But judging from the position of the sun, it was already late morning. We'd eaten and slept in my father's realm, figuring we wouldn't be able to close our eyes once we had custody of Setna. It hadn't felt like much of a rest, but obviously we'd spent more time down under than I realized. The day was slipping by. Tomorrow at dawn, the rebels would attack the first gnome, and Apophis would rise. Zia stood next to me at the bow. She'd showered and changed into a spare set of combat clothes, a camo tank top, olive cargo pants tucked into her boots. Maybe that doesn't sound glamorous, but in the morning sunlight, she was beautiful. Best of all, she was here in person, not a reflection in the scrying bowl, not a shopti. When the wind changed directions, I caught the scent of her lemon shampoo. Our forearms touched as we leaned against the rail, but she didn't seem to mind. Her skin was feverishly warm. "What are you thinking?" I asked. She had trouble focusing on me. Up close, the flecks of green and black in her amber eyes were sort of hypnotizing.
"I was thinking about Ra," she said, "wondering who's taking care of him today."
"I'm sure he's fine." But I felt a little disappointed. Personally, I was thinking about the moment when Zia had taken my hand in the dining room last night.
"Sometimes you have to follow your heart.
This might be our last day on Earth. If it was, I should really tell Zia how I felt about her. I mean, I thought she knew, but I didn't know that she knew, so... Oh, man, headache. I started to say, "Zia," Setna materialized next to us. "All better." In the daylight, he looked almost like flesh and blood, but when he turned in a circle, showing off his new clothes, his face and hands flickered holographically. I'd given him permission to put on something besides the loincloth. In fact, I'd insisted. But I hadn't expected an outfit so mind-boggling. Maybe he was trying to live up to Sadie's nickname for him, Uncle Vinny. He wore a black suit jacket with padded shoulders, a red T-shirt, a crisp pair of jeans, and blindingly white running shoes. Around his neck was a heavy gold chain of interlocking ankhs. On each pinky, he wore a ring the size of a jawbreaker with a symbol of power, Wass, set in diamonds. His hair was combed back with even more grease. His eyes were lined with kohl. He looked like the ancient Egyptian mafia. Then I noticed something missing from his ensemble. He didn't seem to be wearing the ribbons of Hathor. I'll admit, I panicked. I yelled the command word Zia had taught me. "Toss!" The symbol for bind flared in Setna's face. The ribbons of Hathor reappeared around his neck, wrists, ankles, chest, and waist. They expanded aggressively, cocooning Setna in a pink tornado until he was wrapped tight as a mummy with nothing showing but his eyes. "Mmm!" he protested. I took a deep breath. Then I snapped my fingers. The bindings shrank back to their normal size. "What was that for?" Setna demanded. "I didn't see the ribbons."
"You didn't?"
Setna laughed.
"Carter, Carter, Carter, come on, pal. That's just an illusion, a cosmetic change. I can't really get out of these things."
He held out his wrists. The ribbons vanished, then reappeared.
"See? I'm just concealing them, 'cause pink doesn't go with my outfit."
Zia snorted.
"Nothing goes with that outfit."
Setna shot her an irritated look. No need to get personal, doll. Just relax, okay? You saw what happens. One word from you and I'm tied up good. No problems. His tone sounded so reasonable. Setna was no problem. Setna would cooperate. I could just relax. In the back of my mind, the voice of Horus said, "Careful." I raised my mental guard. Suddenly I was aware of hieroglyphs floating in the air around me, half-visible wisps of smoke. I willed them to disappear, and they fizzled like gnats in a bug zapper. "Stop it with the magic words, Setna. I'll relax when our business is done and you're back in my dad's custody. Now, where are we going?" A moment of surprise passed over Setna's face. He hid it with a smile. "Sure, no problem. Glad to see that Path of the Gods magic is working out for you. How you doing in there, Horus?" Zia snarled impatiently. "Just answer the question, you maggot, before I burn that smile off your face." She thrust out her hand. Flames wreathed her fingers. "Zia, whoa," I said. I'd seen her get angry before, but the burn-your-smile-off tactic seemed a little harsh, even for her. Setna didn't seem concerned. From his jacket, he pulled a strange white comb. Were those human finger bones? And brushed his greasy hair. "Poor Zia," he said. "The old man is getting to you, isn't he? Having any trouble with, temperature control yet? I've seen a few people in your situation spontaneously combust. Not pretty." His words obviously rattled Zia. Her eyes seethed with loathing, but she closed her fist and extinguished the flames. "You vile, despicable..." "Take it easy, doll," Setna said. "I'm just expressing concern. As for where we're going, south of Cairo, the ruins of Memphis." I wondered what he'd meant about Zia. I decided this wasn't the time to ask. I didn't want Zia's flaming fingers in my face. I tried to recall what I knew about Memphis. I remembered it was one of the old capitals of Egypt, but it had been destroyed centuries ago. Most of the ruins were buried under modern Cairo. Some were scattered in the desert to the south. My dad had probably taken me to excavation sites in that area once or twice, but I didn't have any clear recollection. After a few years, all the dig sites sort of blended together. "Where exactly?" I demanded. "Memphis was a big place." Setna wiggled his eyebrows. "You got that right. Man, the times I used to have in Gambler's Alley. But never mind. The less you know, pal, the better. We don't want our snaky chaos friend gleaning information from your mind, do we? Speaking of which, it's a miracle he hasn't already seen your plans and sent some nasty monster to stop you. You seriously need to work on your mental defenses. Reading your mind is way too easy. As for your girlfriend here..." He leaned toward me with a grin. "Would you like to know what she's thinking?" Zia understood the ribbons of Hathor better than I did. Instantly, the band around Setna's neck tightened and became a lovely pink collar with a leash. Setna gagged and clawed at his throat. Zia grabbed the other end of the lead.
"Setna, you and I are going to the wheelhouse," she announced. "You will give the captain exact information about where we're going, or you'll never breathe again. Understood?"
She didn't wait for a response. He couldn't have given one anyway. She dragged him across the deck and up the stairs like a very bad dog. As soon as they disappeared into the pilot's house, someone next to me chuckled.
"Remind me not to get on her bad side."
Horace's instincts kicked in. Before I knew what was happening, I'd summoned my hepesh from the Duat and was resting the curved edge against my visitor's throat.
"Really?" said the god of chaos. This is how you greet an old friend.
Set leaned casually against the rail in a black three-piece suit and a matching pork pie hat. The outfit was striking against his blood-red skin. The last time I'd seen him, he'd been bald. Now he had braided cornrows decorated with rubies. His black eyes glittered behind small round glasses. With a chill, I realized he was impersonating Amos. "Stop that!" I pressed my blade against his throat. "Stop mocking my uncle!" Set looked offended.
"Mocking? My dear boy, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. Now, please, can we talk like civilized, semi-divine beings?"
With one finger, he pushed the hepesh away from his neck. I lowered my blade. Now that I was over my initial shock, I had to admit I was curious about what he wanted. "Why are you here?" I demanded.
"Oh, pick a reason. The world ends tomorrow. Perhaps I wanted to say goodbye."
He grinned and waved.
"Bye? Or perhaps I wanted to explain. Or give you a warning."
I glanced toward the wheelhouse. I couldn't see Zia. No alarm bells were ringing. No one else seemed to have noticed that the god of evil had just materialized on our boat. Set followed my gaze.
"How about that Setna, huh? I love that guy."
"You would," I muttered. "Was he named after you?"
"Nah, Setna is just his nickname. His real name is Kayam Wasit, so you can see why he likes Setna better. I hope he doesn't kill you right away. He's a lot of fun. Until he kills you."
"Is that what you wanted to explain?" Set adjusted his glasses.
"No, no. It's the thing with Amos. You've got the wrong idea."
"You mean that you possessed him and tried to destroy him?" I asked. "That you almost shattered his mind, and that now you want to do it again?"
"The first two. True. The last one, no. Amos called me kid. You gotta understand, I could never have invaded his mind in the first place if he didn't share some of my qualities. He understands me."
I clenched my sword. "I understand you too. You're evil." Set laughed.
"You figure that out all by yourself. The god of evil is evil." "Sure I am, but not pure evil. Not pure chaos, either. After I spent some time in Amos's head, he understood. I'm like that improvisational jazz he loves. Chaos within order. That's our connection. And I'm still a god, Carter. I'm... what do you call it? The loyal opposition."
"Loyal. Yeah, right." Set gave me a sly smile.
"Okay, I want to rule the world. Destroy anyone who gets in my way? Of course. But that snake, Apophis, he takes things too far. He wants to pull the whole of creation down into a big, soupy, primordial mess. Where's the fun in that? If it comes down to Ra or Apophis, I fight on Ra's side. That's why Amos and I have a deal. He's learning the path of Set. I'm going to help him."
My arms trembled. I wanted to cut Set's head off, but I wasn't sure I had the strength. I also wasn't sure it would hurt him. I knew from Horus that gods tended to laugh off simple injuries like decapitation. "You expect me to believe you'll cooperate with Amos?" I asked, "without trying to overpower him?"
"Sure, I'll try. But you should have more faith in your uncle. He's stronger than you think. Who do you think sent me here to explain?"
An electric charge went through my body. I wanted to believe Amos had everything under control, but this was Set talking. He did remind me a lot of the ghost magician Setna, and that wasn't a good thing. "You've done your explaining," I said. "Now you can leave." Set shrugged.
"Okay, but it does seem like there was one more thing."
He tapped his chin.
"Oh, right. The warning."
"The warning?" I repeated.
"Because usually when Horus and I fight, it would be me who was responsible for what's about to kill you. But this time, it's not. I thought you should know. Apophis is so copying my moves, but like I said..."
He took off his pork pie hat and bowed, the rubies glittering in his cornrows.
"Imitation is flattery."
"What are you..." The riverboat lurched and groaned as if we'd hit a sandbar. Up in the wheelhouse, the alarm bell dinged. The glowing crew orbs zipped around the deck in a panic. "What's happening?" I grabbed the rail.
"Oh, that'd be the giant hippo,"
Set said casually.
"Good luck."
He disappeared in a cloud of red smoke as a monstrous shape rose from the Nile. You might not think a hippo could inspire terror. Screaming, "Hippo!" doesn't have the same impact as screaming, "Shark!" But I'm telling you, as the Egyptian queen careened to one side, its paddle wheel lifting completely out of the water, and I saw that monster emerge from the deep, I nearly discovered the hieroglyphs for accident in my pants. The creature was easily as big as our riverboat. Its skin glistened purple and gray. As it rose near the bow, it fixed its eyes on me with unmistakable malice and opened a maw the size of an airplane hangar. Its bottom peg-like teeth were taller than me. Looking down the creature's throat, I felt like I was seeing a bright pink tunnel straight to the underworld. The monster could have eaten me right there, along with the front half of the boat. I would have been too paralyzed to react. Instead, the hippo bellowed. Imagine someone revving a dirt bike, then blowing a trumpet. Now imagine those sounds amplified 20 times, coming at you in a blast of breath that smells of rotten fish and pond scum. That's what a giant hippo's war cry is like. Somewhere behind me, Zia yelled, "Hippo!" which I thought was a little late. She stumbled toward me over the rocking deck, the tip of her staff on fire. Our ghostly pal Setna floated behind her, grinning with delight.
"There it is!" Setna shook his diamond pinky rings. "Told ya Apophis would send a monster to kill ya."
"You're so smart!" I shouted. "Now, how do we stop it?" The hippo shoved its face against the Egyptian queen. I tumbled backward and slammed against the deckhouse. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Zia blast a column of fire at the creature's face. The flames went straight up its left nostril, which just made the hippo mad. It snorted smoke and bashed the ship harder, catapulting Zia into the river. "No!" I staggered to my feet. I tried to summon the avatar of Horus, but my head was throbbing. My focus was shot.
"Want some advice?"
Setna wafted next to me, unaffected by the rocking of the ship.
"I could give you a spell to use."
His evil smile didn't exactly fill me with confidence.
"Just stay put."
I pointed at his hands and yelled, "Toss." The ribbons of Hathor tied his wrists together.
"Oh, come on," he complained. "How am I supposed to comb my hair like this?"
The hippo peered at me over the rail, its eyes like a greasy black dinner plate. Up in the wheelhouse, blood-stained Blade rang the alarm bell and shouted at the crew,
Hard to port. Hard to port.
Somewhere over the side, I heard Zia choking and splashing, which at least meant she was alive. But I had to keep the hippo away from her and give the Egyptian queen time to disengage. I grabbed my sword, charged up the tilting deck, and leaped straight onto the monster's head. My first discovery? Hippos are slippery. I scrambled for a handhold, not